You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Second and nine. A pump fake and then to the near side, Hill. Taysom Hill, touchdown, Saints. That's a 44-yard penalty. Brady, end zone, touchdown, Bucs. Cade Otton. It's third down. Underneath, and touchdown, Rashad White. Tie game with the extra point to come.
If I didn't see it, I wouldn't believe it. Tom Brady did it again after 55 of the most miserable minutes of his career. Tom Brady led a comeback from 16 to 3 down in the final 5 minutes to lead the Buccaneers to a 17-16 win. It's going to go down as the biggest game in the NFC South all season long. I am Greg Rosenthal. I'm joined here by Justin Graver. We had a last-minute cancellation here in terms of a guest, and it's all coming up Tom Brady, and it's all coming up Gravedigger. No one I'd rather spend the next half hour with talking about a classic game. I thought we were going to have one podcast, Justin. I thought it was going to be one sort of podcast, and then now it's a completely different podcast.
I know. We're sitting there towards the end of the fourth quarter thinking, all right, this is just going to wind down. We are gathering our thoughts about talking about how the Saints were able to stifle the Buccaneers' offense, and then bang! Tom Brady leads two touchdown drives out of nowhere.
And, you know, there's almost an inclination to think, oh, it's Tom Brady. Like, of course that happened. Like, of course he did that. And, of course, he got every break along the way for it to happen. And there's part of me that understands that. And we can go through how that all happened. But no one was thinking this was going to happen at 16-3. Even the darkest of dark Saints fans were not thinking that this could happen. This was as thorough and depressing a beatdown of this Bucs offense as we've seen all year, and we've seen a lot of them. Next Gen Stats marks it as the fourth most improbable comeback of the Next Gen Stats era. That's since 2016, when the Bucs were trailing 16-3 with 5:34 left in the game. They had a 0.7% chance of winning. So let's start at the end. Let's start on that beautiful route by Rashad White. Rashad White, who I wish was in at the goal line early in the game when they gave it to old Leonard Fournette, who our buddy Chris Wessling, I'm in the Chris Wessling podcast studio, you know, used to call, like the tank. You know, he was like a tanker trying to make a turn, and he couldn't
make... Battleship Lenny.
Battleship Lenny, that's it. My brain is just old and terrible. It's decaying. Like, Tom Brady's still doing well, and I am not at my age. Rashad White makes such a great angle route where you pivot inside and then break outside, and Tom Brady had just enough subtle movement in the pocket, I think, to avoid. It was Cam Jordan rushing on that play, and that's the type of play that Tom Brady has done so well, which is so subtle for so long, just making that slight move, waiting a half beat later, and having a running back who can make a great route like that. The Kevin Fox back in the day, Shane Vereen, James White, and he overcame Tom Brady, a holding call just a few plays before by Donovan Smith that I thought was going to be the final thing that ended up knocking the Bucs out, a mistake that moved them back to the 16-yard line. But a couple plays later, he gets it right back to the six, and he trusts the rookie in a big spot, and he's just like as happy as you'd ever want to see Tom Brady. Justin Graver, at this point, are you annoyed by seeing Tom Brady this happy in big moments?
I've never been a Tom Brady hater.
I like
to appreciate the greatness.
Good.
And you know, I think we need to appreciate it as long as it's still here, because by next season, we may never see Tom Brady jumping around on a field celebrating again if he retires at the end of this year.
No, he's not going anywhere.
But no, I like seeing Tom Brady celebrate, especially when he's not playing against my team.
Right. I was thinking maybe kind of as a Titans fan, AFC fan over the years, like him leaving the field and he said, F yeah! You know, he was caught on camera, you know, using the F word, and Tristan Wirfs, who's out of this game with an injury, catches Tom Brady, who jumps into his arms. Made me think, hey, Tristan Wirfs might be back next week. So
that ankle might not be so bad.
Right, and he might be back. But it also got me thinking of, like, you know, Tom Brady's having fun in these moments, and he's clearly not having much fun the rest of the game and for much of this season, because it's the worst team he's been on of his whole career. That he's been the starter. He's going to set his career high for losses of teams he started, most likely. He would have tied it if they lost this game. But he's had these moments. He had this moment against the Rams. He had another crazy, now he has this crazy one. And it got me thinking, like, isn't that worth it? Like, what is the point of continuing to play? I'm not saying having family troubles is worth it, but the idea of playing football at all, isn't this the whole point? Like, do you have to know that your team is a great team and potentially can win the Super Bowl, Justin, for it to have meaning? Because this is not a great Bucs team. It's not even a good Bucs team. I keep thinking maybe they can improve at some point and become a good Bucs team, but at a certain point, I've lost hope. Certainly during this game, I've lost hope, and so they're just like searching for these moments, and he finds them. And to me, that kind of is what it's about, right? I have a feeling he feels that way. Is you're just chasing that feeling, and you get it, and it's fleeting. You can't hold on to it. But you got it for tonight, and you got it for the next couple of days. You certainly got it in that moment on the field, and you're chasing it to have it a few more times this season. And, like, I think that has to be enough.
You only one team wins a Super Bowl.
Right.
So every other team, are they miserable when the season ends? Was it all a waste of time? No, they have to be playing for those moments, because that's probably, I'm assuming, why all these guys love playing football so much.
Well, I think people love football, and we love covering it for many different reasons, and everyone's different. But I think when it's someone like Brady, who is different than other players, I've heard Dominique Foxworth talk about this on Bomani Jones's podcast. Like, when people ask him what Brady's thinking in certain moments, or he's like, how, like, there are guys like that are different. Like, yes, you have to be wired a certain way to become a great professional athlete, but the guys like a Ray Lewis or a Tom Brady or any Jerry Rice, all-time great that you want to think, they're even at a different level. And I think about Bill Belichick when he's asked about football, and he's so gruff, but he says he loves every single aspect of it, and it comes out in strange ways. But I think the most satisfying thing, like, for Tom Brady is those moments. And I think a game like this, as corny as I'm making it sound, I think makes it all worth it, which is crazy because he's never looked older in a game than he did for this game for 55 minutes. And that's the crazy thing about football, is that none of that matters. Our whole podcast was blown up, and his whole experience of the night was blown up. I mean, as much as I want to crush the Saints coaching staff and point out all the things that they did wrong and that went wrong for the Saints, and we will. They also had only given up 3 points in 8 drives until those last 2 drives. So right. They gave up 3 points in 8 drives and then gave up 14 points in 5 minutes. One of those drives was a 91-yard, 2-minute drive. I think it was reasonable to expect, if you're Dennis Allen, that that wouldn't happen.
Right.
I think it was reasonable to expect as fans watching this game that like we weren't going to see any Tom Brady magic because there was nothing early in this game for 3.5 quarters, Justin, that would have told us that this could possibly happen. So you have to give some credit to the Buccaneers just for doing it, and you have to give some agency to the Saints defense for giving up the lead. It's not all just the coaches.
Well, for the first 54 minutes and 39 seconds of this game, the Bucs totaled 196 yards. And in the last 5:21, they totaled 154 yards. So nearly their entire first 55-minute output they matched on the last 2 drives. I mean, they had that opening drive that went 16 plays, 72 yards, installed in the red zone, and then they didn't move the ball into scoring position again the rest of the game. They were almost there when they had somebody fumbled, lost the ball. Was that White?
Right, but even that was on a third down where they would have been punting too. That first drive, let's get to there quickly before backing up and talking about the Saints' mistakes. That first drive was indicative to me of the entire Bucs season. 16 plays, 8 minutes taken off the clock, and they end up getting 3 points. They have to work so hard for points. This is a station-to-station offense. They haven't been able to hit the big plays. The biggest play tonight was 22 yards to Mike Evans, and even that was in the comeback at the end. For a while, 12 yards was their biggest play. But they slowly move the ball down the field, and then they get it to the 5-yard line. And at that point, 1-yard run by Fournette, 1-yard pass to Godwin, and then a great play call where they get the ball out to Fournette on the edge, and Julio Jones and Godwin are blocking their asses off, have perfect blocks, and all Lenny has to do is get to the edge, and he has plenty of time to do it or make a guy miss in Marcus May, and he can't do it and gets taken down, and they settle for 3. And that, to me, has been what the Buccaneers have been, except for in these late situations against the Rams and the Saints in these 2 games. That's kind of who they are. At some point, I'm not expecting that to change, and I feel like that's going to be their kryptonite ultimately because it's a good enough defense. But they somehow still have Tom Brady, who's been in so many situations and can figure things out at the end, even if he can't figure it out for the entire rest of the game.
Do you think that Brady's accuracy is trending downward in this season or in this game? There was a few moments in this game, and even on that Leonard Fournette 1-yard catch that he couldn't get in the end zone on, I think Aikman said Tom's got to put that out there a little more so he can kind of catch and run. And there was a few times throughout the game where it felt like his ball placement just wasn't what we're used to with Tom Brady. But I'm curious what you saw as a former QB index writer and a QB evaluator.
You're really buttering me up. The Graver Rosenthal Alliance is strong. And as an inveterate Tom Brady watcher, I mean, yeah. I've tried to watch every throw of his career, I guess. And yeah, his accuracy is worse this year, and you saw it tonight. And I think that's where his age is showing up a little bit. People talk about his movement. I mean, he can never move. And yes, he's even more wary of getting hit now than ever before and getting rid of the ball quicker than ever before. And he's not trusting that offensive line, which was missing Tristan Wirfs more than ever before. But I think it's just he misses more throws, especially down the field. And Troy is trying to say maybe it's a timing thing that Evans and Julio aren't as fast as Tom Brady's expecting it to be. But you see it on some of the shorter routes. Even in that final game-winning drive, he had 2 straight throws to Otten, which is not about the speed of the receiver where he's not. So I think what's frustrating for Brady is he's still got the mental side of it, obviously. And that's as good or better than ever. He's still got the arm strength, and he's still like a physically strong human, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that actually hasn't gone. His heater seems as good as that hasn't declined, and he can throw the ball a long way, so it's not a Drew Brees or Matt Ryan situation either. It's just that it's not as consistent. And that reminds me of every sport. You can, if you're a great veteran, you can call upon your greatness, play at a time, quarter at a time, game at a time, here or there, but the consistency to do it like repeatedly isn't there. And I think you can see it on his face. He's just so frustrated. Doesn't it seem miserable to be a Buccaneer this year? Like, especially on offense, it just seemed like they were not having any fun.
Yeah, it just looks so hard. Gaining 2 yards looks difficult for this offense until the last drive.
Right, and I know we keep having to say that, but I think it's okay to talk about the rest of the game, too. The crowd boos him going into halftime. Todd Bowles is punting at every single opportunity, and the way the game ended, you could say rewarded his decision to punt. It was on 4th and 10 late in the game when Tom Brady tried to stage his own mutiny and push the punting team back to the sidelines. And then there was a break in play, and then because of an injury, and then Todd Bowles had time to think about it and said, like, no, I'm the boss of this team. We're going to punt it. It was an amazing sequence where I think if Cam Jordan didn't go down with an injury in that spot, they would have actually gone for it. That one didn't bother me as much, and it did bother me, as the possession before, where they punted on the Saints' 40-yard line in the fourth quarter, down 16-3. And I know the Bucs won this game, but to me, that's why Todd Bowles, and thinking about the game in such a defensive way, in a conservative way, are just frustrating. And you can say that the result makes him right. No, I don't care. The process was wrong. And the process was wrong on the other side, too.
Yep.
Give me your favorite Dennis Allen moment from this game. Putting you on the spot. Or just decision, yeah, or anything that the Saints that got you.
There's two that stand out because they're almost the exact same situation. 4th and 2 from the Bucs 11. Mm-hmm. 4th and 2 from the Bucs, 3-yard line?
Yep. The one on the three killed.
Yeah, and they kick field goals on both of those. The one on the three is stupid, but is it? I feel like the other one was a worse decision because it was later in the game and you have the chance to ice it. Like, they're both bad decisions in my opinion, but I feel like the later one is like you just need 2 yards and the game is essentially over.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought those up. Dennis Allen goes for a field goal. Yeah, at it wasn't quite 4th and goal, but it was like
fourth and two and a half, basically.
From the three. Kicks a field goal there. At that point, they're up 10-3, and he's thinking, well, I'm going to make this a two-score game. It's a low-scoring game. We just had the ball forever. I'm going to trust my defense. I think that one is even worse because you're closer to the touchdown. The next one, it's at the 11-yard line where they choose to go for it. You could argue that that's worse because all it's doing is making it a 13-point game.
Right. It's still 2 touchdowns.
And the thing about it is defensive coaches think like they're trying to protect their defense and get points, and we're going to get stops, and so all we got to do is keep getting points. If you really trusted your defense, just go for it.
Like, right.
To me, going for it is trusting your defense more. I think go for it on the 4th and 3 because it's hard to get to the 3-yard line and it's hard to score in this game. And I trust my defense so much that you're going to be on the 3-yard line and you got to score touchdowns. And here's the thing. Trusting your defense very rarely works. Look what happened in this game. If they had gone for either one of those, they would have been up and made it. Then they could have been up by more than 2 touchdowns, and they win. They trusted their defense, and ultimately it's 2022. Even when you're playing a 45-year-old Brady, trusting your defense doesn't normally work. And it's funny because in this game, there was so much like punt to win, as Patrick Claibon put it on Twitter. Brian Daboll tried to do it. It was like an amazing week for punt to win.
Yeah.
Todd Bowles did the same thing. He punted when he was on the Saints' 40-yard line, as we pointed out. And in that situation, defensive coaches always think it's going to be like a perfect punt and you're going to pin him back. But instead, he punted it straight into the end zone. And the Saints were then past the 40-yard line and had regained that field position that you thought was so valuable like 4 plays later after a nice throw by Andy Dalton to Olave. I felt weird in this game because obviously I love Brady in general. But it just didn't feel like they deserved to win this game. I picked the Bucks to win this game. I usually root for my picks too. But it just didn't feel like they deserved to win this game. And I have a soft spot for the Saints. So either way, I just felt bad for Andy Dalton is the point I'm getting to. Andy Dalton played well in this game. This was a pretty classic Andy Dalton 2022 game. 20 for 28, 229, and a touchdown. His three best throws of the night were dropped. Olave dropped one that was in the red zone that would have set them up in the first half to try to go in and score. They end up getting nothing out of that. Was it Landry that dropped the other big pass that would have been a touchdown in the first half? So they end up settling for three. Beautiful throw. And then finally, the play that people will remember, Taysom Hill dropped a pass with just over 5 minutes left on just over 2.5 minutes left on 3rd and 17. I couldn't believe they dropped back to pass in that spot. And then I really couldn't believe the Red Rifle had the guts to make that throw in between three players, a whole shot, and he killed it. It was a perfect throw. It was right in Taysom Hill's hands. That would have won the game. I did not mind that play because it was you're letting your best player try to make a play. Their best player was Andy Dalton.
And their other best player is Taysom Hill. I mean, you almost have to credit, like we want to give Brady all this credit for the comeback, but if Carl Nassib doesn't sack Andy Dalton on second down and Keanu Neal doesn't put his helmet right in the chest of Taysom Hill where the ball is, then Tom Brady doesn't have a chance to come back.
Was it Nassib who got that sack right before? Wow, because he also had the deflection. He had a monster last 5 minutes for a team that has been searching for a pass rusher, and he's playing more since Shaq Barrett got hurt. Great call there. I didn't even realize that was him. That play by Keanu Neal, yes, you don't normally trust Taysom Hill as a receiver. He did have a 30-yard touchdown in this game where he was basically left wide open by Keanu Neal. He had more yards in this game receiving 35 than he had all season coming into the game. He had 31 coming into the game. But I don't hate that play call there. I do hate what started this whole comeback. Do you know what play I'm going to talk about? Because this is, I believe, as much as that 3rd and 17 people are going to remember for stopping the clock and being so aggressive, there was a very strange play not too long before that was routine, and the Saints would have won the game if it hadn't happened. This is a tough quiz.
Mark Ingram going out of bounds.
That's it! See, that's the thing. Like, when people get mad about Tom Brady gets so much luck, like, those are the types of plays they remember. Andy Dalton, 6 minutes, 11 seconds to left, throws on 2nd and 8. I like that they were staying aggressive there. They're up 16-3. They shouldn't be that worried. And it's a quick pass to a running back. Mark Ingram, who's getting run down by, I think it was Devin White, just jogs out of bounds.
Yeah.
And it's not about stopping the clock. The clock doesn't stop, by the way, before 5 minutes. If I could just teach Twitter one thing, because it's a lot of really great professionals out there that do this. The clock doesn't stop when you go out of bounds until there's 5 minutes left. People still really struggle with that.
Yeah, I know.
They always like, how could you stop the clock?
He's out of bounds. Stop the clock.
8 minutes left, 10 minutes left. Everyone, national reporters, like really experienced people, like, let's get this right. All Mark Ingram had to do was go get that first down. And I think the game's over. And he just ran out of bounds.
Yeah.
And then they had a curious play call to pass it on 3rd and 1 right after that to Callaway. They don't complete it. I hate not running there on 3rd and 1. In general, I don't love passing on 3rd and 1. I know they were struggling to run all night, but when the clock is such a big factor in that spot, the combined advantage of you're more likely to get it running the ball anyways, and you would have drained 30 more seconds off the clock, worst case scenario, that was a really bad play call. And that two-play sequence actually set everything up.
Put Taysom Hill in and QB sneak it with him, or let him do his stupid power thing that he has taken. How many times have they had like a 3rd or 4th and 1 where Taysom Hill's run the QB power and taken it 40 yards for a touchdown, you know?
It does feel like Taysom Hill plays work most of the time, although he only went for 10 yards here. Rushing. Wow. Quickly, just some other just little thoughts on this game. Alvin Kamara cannot get it going running the ball. I mean, Cam Jordan and Lavonte David, if you turned on any Saints-Bucks game for the last 10 years, have been like the two best defensive players in the NFC South. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Give them some love.
Yeah.
The Bucks defense has been good all year. Like, they kept them in this game. And then finally, I think the reason I was a little disappointed too by the ending of this game, and why I know Mark was on our text thread, I wanted some NFC South chaos.
I know.
Like, explain what you would have been looking for, you know, the rest of the season in the NFC South if they had lost this game, or the repercussions of this game. It was a huge game.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see, like, the Falcons have a chance with a losing record to try to make some noise. But I guess at this point, the Buccaneers are going to go into Dallas and get their butts kicked in the first round of the playoffs.
Most likely. So this puts the Bucs at 6-6. If they had lost this game, the Saints would have had 5 wins, the Bucs would have had 5 wins, the Falcons would have had 5 wins, and the Panthers would have had 4 wins. And yes, it would be more, as ugly and annoying as this division is, every team looks the exact same, by the way. They all play the same way. None of them are good. They at least would have been ugly compelling, or ugly important down the stretch, because all their games would have kept mattering. Because if you look at the Bucs' schedule the next couple of weeks, they have the 49ers next week. I know it's Brock Purdy, but the Bucs are underdogs in that game, even with Brock Purdy. Then they have the Bengals. That's a loss. If they had lost this game, Justin, I think they would have been staring at 5-9. I really think the Panthers are probably playing the best in this division, but you could easily make the case of any of those 4 teams making it. And I don't think they're quite out of it yet, the Falcons.
They're not.
But it's a little harder for the Panthers now to make up 2 wins over the rest of the season. The Saints would have actually, who have a pretty forgiving schedule the rest of the way, would have maybe been the favorites in this division. They're going into their bye, and then they would add the Falcons, Browns, Eagles, Panthers. So other than the Eagles game, you know, they would feel good in their division games. Like, division games are going to decide a lot here, but that's why it's just a total gut punch of a loss for the Saints and their fans, except for my friends on the Saints Twitter podcast who just want to hashtag fire Dennis Allen. And so I'm looking forward to hearing their edition of this game, because if nothing else, this could help them in that endeavor.
Each of these NFC South teams has 2 division games left, which means it's really not over. And the fact that the
it's
Bucks...
It's not over, but it would have been like way more just like wide open, and felt like it was starting to like just be over for the Bucks even.
Ugh. Yeah. It'll be fun if the Falcons-Bucks Week 18 game is for the division, but the Falcons have to make up some ground before then for that to be a thing. And one more thing about this division. There's 2 divisions in the NFL where every team has a negative point differential, the AFC South and the NFC South.
It's a really crazy year that both Eastern divisions are so strong and both Southern divisions are so bad. That was not a bad game in the end. It was a bad game for most of it, but it had a good ending, and a great ending is all you need. Let's end this podcast in a positive way. Top 6 list tonight in honor of Tom Brady, the greatest seasons ever by quarterbacks over the age of 40 in the NFL. Number 6, Warren Moon, 1997 on the Seahawks, led the league in yards per game passing, had a lot of interceptions, but he made the Pro Bowl at 40 with the Seahawks. Number 5 is Brett Favre in that 09 Vikings season, where he just turned the clock back. He electrified the NFL. It sort of got me realizing, as stupid as this is, what the whole Brett Favre phenomenon was all about, because I sort of jumped in terms of a profession just when he was starting to get annoying around 2003 and declining. And that season was so much fun. Number 4 on the list, Tom Brady, 2018. People think like, oh, that wasn't that great a year for them. Oh, they got carried to the Super Bowl by the defense. He went to overtime and outdueled Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead before that. He put a 40 burger on Phillip Rivers the round before that. I don't want to hear anything about carried by a defense. Number three, Tom Brady, the 2020 season, winning the Super Bowl with the Buccaneers in a new spot. Stuck it to anyone who thought he was done, including Bill Belichick. Number two on the list, Tom Brady, 2021. He should have won the MVP last season. No wonder he wants to keep playing. He was the best quarterback in the league. And then finally, number one on the list, Tom Brady, 2017. Yes, they lost the Super Bowl to the Eagles, but that was the best Super Bowl I think he ever played it, and he was on fire that entire season. Problematic defense, but oh my God, was he good. So yeah, you might think he'd be getting old and he got lucky tonight, but don't ever forget, that's Tom Brady you're talking about. For Justin Graver, I couldn't be any more annoying than I just was. I'm sorry. Is that okay, Justin?
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, I don't know. That one was maybe going too far. We'll be back Tuesday. Colleen Wolf is there. Until then, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.